See, now I told you we'd have theme music this week. Hello, welcome to the second weekly installment of Jade's Sunday Afternoon Low Tea. And it is, in fact, on a Sunday this time, and I am, in fact, drinking tea. I'm actually drinking genmacha, which is a Japanese green tea with brown rice. And not only is it wonderfully flavored, but it has some wonderful legends surrounding it. The Japanese are so inventive when it comes to their legends. So I'd like to share that with you before we get started on today's topic. The Legend of Genmacha. The most complete legend I found online is from the Yaya Tea House of New Zealand's website. Yaya Tea House. Those Kiwis. I'm going to read this right off their site. The Legend of Genmacha. It is said that the origins of Genmacha can be traced back to one fateful morning in 15th century Japan. Some places say 14th century. I've seen it somewhere around that era. A samurai, whose name has since been forgotten, was in a meeting with a group of fellow warlords to discuss a military campaign. Green tea was served as the refreshment. A servant of the samurai, by the name of Genma, was in charge to pour the tea. When he came to his master's cup to pour, a few kernels of roasted rice fell out of his sleeve into the cup. In a sudden fit of anger about the ruin of his beloved tea, which was an expensive luxury at the time, the samurai drew his katana and beheaded the servant. Ignoring the blood and the corpse, he sat back down at the table and proceeded to drink his tea. Much to his surprise, he discovered that the rice had transformed the tea, and rather than ruining it, had given the tea a flavor far superior to the pure tea. To honor his late servant, he named the tea after him, Genmacha, and ordered that this new tea be served every morning in commemoration. Of course, this doesn't take into account the fact that genmacha in Japanese actually means brown rice tea, so unless the servant was for some strange reason named brown rice, this really doesn't make any sense. According to Wikipedia, this tea, which is also known as popcorn tea because sometimes the rice will pop during the roasting process and resemble popcorn, this tea was originally drunk by poor Japanese as the rice served as a filler to reduce the price of the tea, which is why it's also known as the people's tea. While this origin sounds a lot more plausible, once we go back to the Yaya Tea House's website, we discover it is also not true. According to this website, genmacha was invented about 90 years ago by a small tea shop in Kyoto, Japan. Most likely one of the original motivations was to create a more affordable tea for mass consumption. The reputation of being a cheap tea has stuck with genmacha until very recently. It was mostly made with low-grade tea leaves from the late harvest, otherwise known as bancha, and the rice was used to mask off flavors of the tea. In recent years, many kinds of genmacha have been refined into an exquisite tea indeed, replacement of cheap bancha leaves with the much higher quality sencha leaves, or the addition of matcha, which are tea leaves ground to a tea powder, have helped to redefine genmacha's image. If you know anything about matcha, matcha is what you see in the Japanese tea ceremonies, where they take the green tea powder and they whisk it. Anybody who's a Karate Kid fan will know what I'm talking about. All right, matcha, also one of my favorite teas, and we will be getting to some of those later. But that is the origins of genmacha. Now, a lot of people I know don't seem to like green tea when they first try it. They say it has a bitter, nasty flavor. I found this to occur from oversteeping the tea. Genmacha usually has a steep time of no more than 2 minutes on almost any tea I've seen. Some places even have it as low as 30 seconds. So really, if you steep it too long, you are going to get a horribly off bitter flavor. 1 to 2 minutes is pretty much the max, and you'll get that nice, lovely flavor associated with green tea. So if you've had problems with drinking green tea up till now, you might be oversteeping it or steeping it at too high a water temperature. The water should not be boiling. And now we're going to move on to today's topic of the day. Making the most of your emergency room visit. So, how was your turkey day? For those of you living in America and Canada, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Last Thursday was Thanksgiving, which is the day we celebrate that the pilgrims, whatever, came over with the Indians, and they had a lovely little harvest festival. That's really what Thanksgiving is. It's a harvest festival celebration. And, you know, then we robbed them of our lands and gave them all kinds of horrible diseases like smallpox and wiped them out. And then that is followed, that Thursday is followed by Black Friday. And Black Friday is the first official day of the holiday shopping season, which is a day we trample each other in the stores. Although this year we've started something new called Black Thursday, which is stores who are so eager for a sale that they will actually open on Thanksgiving Day and force people to work so that they can possibly get a few more customers in. Sadly, these aren't even the best days to get the best deals. If you look around, usually about a week after Black Friday, you start to get really great deals up until about midway through December. And then after that, they expect all the late holiday shoppers to start coming in. So if you want the best deals, you want to start in at like the beginning of December to about midway through December. And that's actually when you get the best sale prices. Not Black Friday, not Cyber Monday, not Black Thursday, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. I can't believe they're now calling Thanksgiving Black Thursday. Anyway, I spent my turkey day in the emergency room. And my Thanksgiving dinner was orange jello and diet ginger ale. Two of my favorite things. Why orange jello? Like, that was the only flavor of jello they had. It's like the least favorite of all jello flavors. There must have been some kind of sale on orange jello. But no, it was not related to turkey. In fact, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to eat Thanksgiving dinner at all. I haven't been able to eat for about a week now. I've actually been sick since Saturday previous, and my stomach has been terribly upset, and I've been having weird abdominal pains. I just chose to go on Thanksgiving simply because, A, I was supposed to be making an authentic lamb Rogan Josh, and I knew I wouldn't be able to eat a curry. I could barely eat rice or chicken broth with crackers. If I can't eat an apple or applesauce, I obviously can't eat lamb Rogan Josh. And B, I figured, you know, it'd be awfully quiet to go in on Thanksgiving, which leads me to rule number one of how to make the most of your emergency room visit, and that is pick your timing. Now, I picked mine because it was a holiday, so I was kind of trying to time it between the people who lit themselves on fire by deep frying their turkeys, followed by the late night drunks. I picked sort of a late afternoon thing, and I was actually correct. It was very slow when we entered the emergency room. There was one other person in the waiting room. We went right back into the room. My significant other actually managed to go with me, even though he's hospital phobic. But we picked the nice hospital. He drove me there, all that. It was not that bad. So the only waiting time came around when the CT scan started, because I'd been there a while. And at that point, the drunks were starting to come in and the traumas were starting to come in. And so I finally sent him home. It took me 3 hours to get into the CT scan. Lovely. But before then, everything was going very, very quickly. So I picked a great time to go to the emergency room. So picking your timing is extremely important. Now, nationwide, the slow times are supposedly from 4 a.m. to 9 a.m., which is after the drunks, to 9 a.m. I haven't necessarily found that to be true so much. I also find that there's a lull sort of in the later afternoon, like when the doctor's offices are still open kind of thing. But that just could be something local to D.C. I don't know. Knowing your emergency room time is very important. So we get that. Other thing is what to bring with you to the emergency room. Generally, of course, you want to bring your list of medications and your list of doctors and definitely your insurance information. God forbid you forget that. So you want that. You'll want to bring a list of allergies, things you're allergic to, and past medical conditions. It's so weird. It's things that you say all the time. Suddenly, when you're on the spot and you're not feeling so well, you completely forget. It's like, what? Wait, I know I'm allergic to something. What could that be? This is probably important for me to remember. And going through the list of medications that I'm on is like I'm sitting there ticking it off my hands like, babe, which one am I forgetting? I don't know. So obviously, maybe I should have written that down. Another thing on Jade's list, going to the emergency room, is I tend to eat. I know. That's exactly what they tell you not to do, right? And obviously, I'm not a doctor or a medical professional, so you should not listen to me. But if, and this is what I say, if I'm going in for something not important, like a broken toe, I break my toes a lot. A broken toe on the list of emergency room visit things, it's something that you need to go to the emergency room for, if for no other reason to get your toe taped up to verify that it is broken, to get a boot and some crutches. You're last on the list if you have a broken toe. I can't think of anything that will make you wait longer in the emergency room than a broken toe. Eat first. Eat a big meal. Eat a Thanksgiving-like meal, because you're going to need it. And bring something to read. Maybe a movie, some kind of movie-watching device, or music, a couple of books, some old magazines. I actually like to bring magazines, because then I can leave them in the waiting room when I go. Sometimes that's nice. Then I feel like I'm doing a good service, because the magazines I have are up to date and aren't related to medicine. It's nothing like bringing an issue of GQ and then leaving it in the waiting room. I do that all the time. Yes, I'm in the hospital way too often. Definitely. Let's see. Be honest about everything. That helps. Because I know lots of people hide all kinds of things. Drug use and strange things that people do to themselves that land them in the emergency room. Stupid human tricks. Yes, if you are a fan of stupid human tricks, then maybe you should let them know. Something you may not consider initially when you're going to the emergency room to bring is singles, just like you're going to a strip club, singles and a roll of quarters. I know that sounds weird, right? Singles are for the vending machines. Also, sometimes the quarters, depending on how old the vending machines are. The quarters are for the payphone because a lot of emergency rooms will not let you use your cell phones. Now, mine, the one I prefer to use, actually does allow you to use your cell phone. And a lot in some emergency rooms, if you go in and you're like, oh, is there a payphone around? They will actually just let you use a phone and be like, dial 9 to get out or whatever. So that can work. But in other words, a lot of times you will actually need those quarters. I know, it's one of the few places that payphones still exist. You will actually need the quarters, and the ones are really good, especially if you're bringing someone along with you and they're going to want to eat, and then you can send them to the waiting room to sneak you candy bars back. Yeah, that is exactly what you will want, singles, just like you're going to strip club. So that's something most people don't think to bring when they're going to the emergency room, but they're highly useful once you're there. Sometimes a blankie is also nice. I know, blankies get kind of gross, though, so make sure you're going to wash it as soon as you get home. I always get athlete's foot when I go to the emergency room with a broken toe because usually my foot swells up enough that I can't get it back in my shoe and I have to wander around like hopping on one foot and then that one foot will sometimes touch the ground and the second it touches the ground, it's like, oof, athlete's foot. Great. Joy. So for me, part of my broken foot first aid involves like a can of athlete's foot spray because I'm going to need it because it's always like under the bandage and then it's like infected under the bandage with athlete's foot where you can't get to it and it's like all itchy and crazy. Yeah, I hate having broken toes. Sketchy. So I had my first sonogram. That was cool. Not pregnant, obviously, but yeah, so my little ultrasound and they put the gel on. Our emergency room has heated gel. Like everybody's always like, ooh, the gel is so cold. It's going to be a little cold. And that's what I was expecting. And she put it on and it was like, ooh, gel is strangely warm. We must have some kind of gel heater thing. Our emergency room also has the blanket warmers. I want one of these for my house, okay? Because it's like you get out and this blanket is like just like it's fresh from the dryer. It's like super warm and toasty and you're like, yay, warm blankies. But apparently we have a blanket warmer and a gel warmer. Love it. So they kept me overnight. That was unexpected. They gave me a lot of morphine. Mind you, morphine does not get you high when you're in incredible pain. In fact, you don't really notice that you're on it, which is sad, but true. So they kept me overnight. They almost kept me an extra day. I slept almost the entire time I was there. It sucked. They had me on this clear liquid diet. So even they had one of those cool menus. Some of the newer places have that. You have like this room service menu and you call down like your food when you want to eat. And then they send it up to you in a hospital tray. Of course, they always get it wrong. Just like regular room service in any hotel. They always get it wrong. But at least it's the thought that they tried. And of course, I was on a clear liquid diet. So all I got to order is like, oh, look, I can get ginger ale or chicken broth. Vegetable broth. This sucks. And meanwhile, I can see the menu of all the wonderful things because hospitals do some great breakfast spreads. And I'm like, oh, I could really use pancakes right now. Damn. Someone bring me some pancakes. And the hospital food is never as good as it looks on the menu anyways. But ours does an amazing hummus and pita bread. It's so unfortunate I didn't actually get to eat it this time. Oh, well. They also have the world's worst coffee shop downstairs. I had my significant other, when he came in to visit me, bring me a coffee, and they forgot, bring me a latte, a soy latte. They forgot to put the espresso in it. I got steamed soy milk. That's what I got. It was kind of amazing. Like, I'm like drinking it, and I'm like, wow, this tastes amazingly weak, and I look at it, and it's like white. I'm like, there's no coffee in this. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's no coffee in this, because I would have noticed that it had a coffee flavor. Only there isn't any. It's steamed milk. You brought me steamed milk. And they were also out of everything. It was a Starbucks. He said the entire counter was out. And then when they let me go, I went down there and I was like, oh, maybe I can actually get a coffee with coffee in it. And then I looked at, yeah, no. No, they had nothing. That cabinet was empty. A Starbucks counter completely empty. and coffee with no coffee in it. Yeah, don't go to the Starbucks in the hospital unless you can help it. Pick some somewhere else. No. I guess the thing I should tell you that you really most need to bring is your patience. People don't have enough patience when they go to the emergency room. Because one of the things they fail to understand is, okay, so this is how an emergency room visit goes, in case you've never been to an emergency room visit. When you first walk into the ER, well, it's a little different if you come in the ambulance. They kind of like do these things as it happens. But if you're walking into an ER, being driven and taken to an ER, the first person you meet is the greeter. Now, since I live in the city, the greeter is generally a police officer, which is a little weird. Normally, the greeter is like a nurse or someone at the desk. And they will send you on, they will take your basic information, and then they'll send you on to the next group of people. Now, sometimes this goes with the triage nurse first and the registration second. Some do the registration first and the triage nurse next. It usually kind of depends on what time they're running on. So the triage nurse will basically take your basic symptoms and your blood pressure and your temperature and these kinds of things and figure out, you know, what you had. This triage, it's determining like how serious is your case. See, people don't understand this. They go in, they say, oh, well, this person came in after me, and then they're getting seen before me. Well, that person obviously has something that the triage nurse thought was more important. And a lot of times people sit in the waiting room for hours and you'll see nobody going back. And the reason is because people have been coming in an ambulance in the back all the time and the rooms are full. They could be very busy in the back with people that come in on the ambulance for emergencies. By the way, coming in on the ambulance does not actually get you into the emergency room any faster. And I've seen many a person come in on the ambulance only to be wheeled out into the waiting room because they called the ambulance thinking they would get seen faster for something that was not an emergency. And then they get triaged in the back. And sometimes they'll get a room back there if there's a lot of rooms open, but you'll sit just as long. And the rest of the time, if there aren't a lot of rooms open and there are actual emergencies coming through, they will wheel you out into the waiting room. And that's just, you know, now you just look silly. You've come in the ambulance and now you're getting wheeled into the waiting room because obviously you were not that important. So yeah, you have the greeter, you have the triage nurse, you have the registration person who takes like your insurance information and that kind of thing. Then after that, after you actually get booked a room in the emergency room, now you have another person come in who's usually the primary nurse. Sometimes they'll take your information again. It's crazy, I know, right? And then they'll usually have your actual doctor will come in. And you might see your doctor very, very short period of time. So they look at you, they're like, all right, we need to run this test, and the nurse comes back, and then you have to run all these tests, and then the doctor will come back, look at the answers to the tests. They might run more tests, or they might just be like, okay, well, this is what it is, and then they give you some medicine, they shuffle you out the door. I've actually had it take longer to get out of the hospital than in the hospital, for whatever reason. Like, getting removed from the hospital is like this horrible bureaucratic mess of paperwork where someone is like, you know, they've got to fill out all these prescriptions and sign them and then tell you what your diagnosis is and print them all out and just the time it takes to do that. It's also getting admitted. If you're getting admitted to the hospital from emergency room to inpatient, expect to have to go through everything again. I know some people complain about this. I asked someone once the reason, like, I just gave you all the answers to all of these questions, and now I'm being admitted to a room, and now you're asking me all these questions all over again. Why are you asking them to me all over again? It's like you started from square one. And the reason was because of the privacy law. This is what they told me anyways, was because of the HIPAA privacy laws. How their computer system was set up was not secure enough for them to be able to transfer my records from the emergency room to the actual hospital. So they had to ask me those things again. That was what I was told anyways. I'm not sure that that was the truth, but that's what they said. The reason they asked them again was because they could not get the records from the emergency room to the regular hospital because they did not have a secure enough way to do that, protect my patient privacy. And it was just the computer system that they would have to put in would be, you know, so expensive, and it was just cheaper, you know, for the hospital's budget to have you just redo all of that information all over again. And that's why they did that. If you have a lot of problems in the hospital, don't be afraid to contact the patient advocate. There's usually a patient advocate. That is your buddy bud. I've asked for advocates before. They almost never give them to me. I'm usually pretty good at just being a crazy bitch, you know, all by myself. But it doesn't necessarily get you anywhere. Being rude and combative in the emergency room isn't going to get you anywhere. Like, you can be rude and combative in the hospital. That might get you somewhere. But actually, in the emergency room, those people are under high stress. When you give them stress first, they're just going to respond by snapping at you. It's not going to work because they're already under high stress scenarios. So being rude or combative to the emergency room personnel, it will not help you any. Now, if you're upstairs and your nurse is being like a slacker, like my nurse, one of my nurses was not ever answering the call sign, then being rude will totally get you somewhere because they're under like a more low stress situation in the emergency room. That's just going to get you not seen at all. That's just going to have people avoid you, and that's not going to get you care. So yes, you have to know when to, you have to know when to be rude, I guess, is important. Oh, another thing, don't ever do this. Do not ever call 911 from the waiting room. I know people do that. Okay. That's ridiculous. Oh, and on the pain scale, always give like your actual pain scale. I found it helpful to like jump it up by like one or two numbers just because otherwise, like, you know, I've collapsed a lung before, look. So my version of 1 to 10 is 10 being the worst pain ever. Well, if you've ever had a collapsed lung, that's more pain than you could possibly imagine any other way except for, you know, collapsing a lung. Really. It really changed my level of pain. So people don't really understand that. So for me, I have to jump the numbers up just a little bit because otherwise I'd be like, well, it's really only a 4 if you consider a collapsed lung as a 10. Most people think stubbing their toe is a 10. Stubbing a toe for me is like a 6. So for me, I have to bump the numbers up a little, and I'm not really, you know, I was in the emergency room and I was like, it's a 9, yo, like, you guys got to do something. They were giving me this morphine and they were like, the pain's still there. And I'm like, hell yeah, the pain's still there. And they were giving me more morphine and they were like, the pain's still there. And I'm like, yes, the pain is still there. And it was, I was dying. I was like, oh wow, my stomach really hurts. Cause they gave me the stuff to drink knowing my stomach was upset. In order to do the CT scan, they had gave me this quart of clear liquid medicine stuff to drink to make it contrast, and that thing, it just tore me up. They should have given me morphine before I started drinking that. Like, I was drinking it and slugging it down, and they're like, wow, you're slugging it down like a champion. I'm like, hell yeah, I've been through this rodeo a time or two before. It was bad. The pain was bad. It was unreal. Although I still wasn't expecting them to keep me overnight. Yeah, scary. Oh, wear comfortable clothes. One of the big things, wear sweats. And if you need an exam that's gonna, you know, need you to wear a gown or whatever, yeah, you're gonna want comfy sweats. Comfy sweats are like the best thing. And a t-shirt. I usually don't wear a bra. You just make that visit as comfortable as you possibly can on yourself, because you are gonna be there for a while.
So I can actually say I was kind of grateful to be in the emergency room this year around on Thanksgiving Day. I didn't have to deal with any family members, drunk or otherwise. That was great. I didn't really have to deal with any people calling me. My cell phone's been broken, but in addition to that, I got to call who I want and be like, hey, I'm in the emergency room, la, la, la. So that was wonderful. Because then everyone's like, oh, you must be having the worst Thanksgiving ever. And I'm like, no, well, I've had some worse ones actually with my family. So, you know, I didn't have to deal with all of that nonsense. I was on a lot of painkillers. That was not so bad. It would have helped had I been on a lot of painkillers and not been in pain. That would have been better. But in all reality, I did not actually have the worst Thanksgiving I've ever had, even though I was in the emergency room. So there you go. Those are Jade's tips for dealing with the emergency room visits. Remember, eat first, bring your ones, bring your insurance information, bring your information, period. You should just have this stuff written down. If you have a chronic illness like I do, I have no excuse for not bringing my information. And I used to be very good about this. I used to have all of that stuff written down in a little paper that I would bring in, and I haven't lately. I've been bad. They keep changing my medicine. That's what I blame on that. But really, it's just me. I've been a slacker. I've been bad. So that's what we have. As far as things that are upcoming in the low teas, we do have an actual tea coming up on December 16th, and that is a live tea. That is the Ribbons and Crafts Salt. As you guys know, salt stands for Sunday afternoon low tea. We will actually be making candy Lays, like Hawaiian Lays. You know, you get laid when you go to Hawaii, right? So we'll be making candy Lays, or I hope to be, on December 16th. Before then, we'll be discussing some medical jargon, I think, is going to be next week's topic. So that should be good. And misuse of medical jargon is one of those things that I hate, like psychobabble terms. I love psychobabble terms. And then we also have the winter solstice party coming up, which is on a Friday, and the end of the world party, which will be great. It's also technically the day I used to say I was going to be married on the 22nd. I used to say if I was ever getting married, I would be married on December 22nd, 2012, because it was the day after the world ended, because I used to tell people, like, I will get married when the world ends. So the world is going to end. So if I were to be married, it would be that day, but that is obviously not going to happen. And then there is one at the end of the year. We're having a post-holiday regifting party. If anybody knows Jade, we know that I'm really, really big on regifting. So those are some wonderful things that we have upcoming. And then I hope that everybody had a much better Thanksgiving than I had, and that you have some things that you are thankful for. I think I'm going to go through a list now of some wonderful things that I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for my significant other. Not many of you know, but today is our 5-year anniversary. I don't know if I mentioned that before. We have been living together for 5 years. It's amazing. Every day is just better than the day before. And I'm so happy he actually managed to make it to the hospital with me. He's so hospital phobic. It was pretty amazing of him. So we were supposed to do dinner in the theater today. Dinner is not going to happen. I have 2 flavors of Jell-O, not orange, in the fridge right now. That will be my dinner. But I'm finally awake now. I've been sleeping for the past several days, and I think I can manage 3 hours of theater, provided I take a quick nap shortly. So dinner and theater, that's what we're doing for our 5-year anniversary, something very low-key. So that's wonderful. And what other things am I thankful for? I'm thankful for my girlfriend. I have my little Polly family. She's such a sweetheart. I know she's having a rough time since our house burned down, but hopefully I should call her soon and see what she's up to. And maybe she'll spend the night tonight. King size bed spits 3. It's awesome. I recommend you try snuggling for 3. There is nothing like being in the middle of a giant snuggle fest. So good. What else do we have going on? I have my love from afar. You know who you are. Yes, no, I have some wonderful peeps. I have some wonderful friends. I have some wonderful people who love me. I have some not so wonderful family, but that gives me wonderful things to talk about. And we will talk about that more in the future, I assure you, because my family makes People and Jerry Springer look like the Brady Bunch. It's kind of scary. Maybe not the Brady Bunch, maybe, I don't know, the Donna Reed family or whatever. Yeah, my family's truly, truly scary. So some other things I'm thankful for include, wow, all of you guys, wonderful teas. I order most of my teas from ZHITEA.com, in case you like to drink along. That's ZHITEA. No, they are not paying me. In fact, I shell out a large amount of money on their teas. But I found they're really good because most of them will go through about 3 steepings. In fact, the second steeping is the best steeping. And then the third steeping, I usually steep it a little longer. And it comes out quite lovely. So that's where I've been getting my tea from, including this wonderful Gemma Chai that I've been drinking today. And what else am I thankful for? I'm thankful for the bunnies of the universe. I'm so hopeful that I'm going to be able to have a bunny soon. And a Pooley. If anybody knows what a Pooley is, it's a kind of a dog that has dreadlocks. I've really been wanting a service dog to get around the no pet issues in my apartment building. And I've been pushing towards a service Pooley because they're hypoallergenic. And I don't know what I'm going to name it, but I've just been calling it the Rasta dog, like Rastafarian dog. I really want a Rasta service dog. Anyway, we're going to close up today's podcast with my daily metta prayer. As you know, metta actually means, M-E-T-T-A, metta means loving kindness. And a daily metta prayer is a daily affirmation of loving kindness towards oneself and others. So here we go with my daily metta prayer. Peace, may it find me. May happiness unwind me, content and fulfilled. May love be what defines me. May I learn kindness toward myself for affection I have earned. May I be granted what I need. May wisdom come with all I've learned. May I be protected from all harm and released from all my fears. May inner peace and ease mark the end of suffering all these years. May I finally be awakened from dream illusions that I see. May I finally be liberated, wake to self, and self-set free. Peace to everyone. I wish you some lovely holiday shopping, and I'll see you next week.